What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is Kevin Scarrett, and I'm with Amy Zander. Amy, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Kevin. How are you?
Very good.
Good.
So, do you remember when we reviewed taglines? We had really some funny ones, but the funnier gaffes, really, they had to do with mistranslations, where they took it to another country and they...
Some of my favorite stuff, man, words,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, like my favorite one, the example that we gave was the Parker Pens.
Yeah.
This was, I don't know, probably 20 years ago when it happened, but they had a tagline, "It won't leak in your pocket and embarrass you," which is a little odd, I think.
Right, but yeah, tagline, pens leaking in your pocket. Yeah, sure, we've all experienced that.
Translated into Spanish as, "It won't leak in your pocket and make you pregnant."
No! Right.
I hope not.
Right, wow, that's great.
So, although we list these kind of oopsies back to back, it does make for some pretty funny content. And we need to be aware that the mistakes do fall into a bigger bucket. You know, it's one where you need to consider the impact of cultural differences on your brand strategy. And this, of course, only applies to people if you're selling products and services that's just in the United States, you might have some slight regional differences, but it's not going to be the same as you taking your show across, across borders, Canada, Mexico, or overseas, or, another country. So those cultural differences is what we're talking about today. So we're going to review some of these, and we're going to get... into discussions about, how it might affect your thinking. So why don't you get our ball rolling?
Sure. Ball rolling. I wonder if every culture has that same slang or if they
ball rolling. I would need to probably address that. I just realized from this podcast, by the way, I'm just kind of taking you on a tangent here.
Mm-hmm.
I use so many dang idiomatic
you
expressions.
Do. Well,
do. I didn't realize it until I heard myself talking for half an hour, 45 minutes at a time.
Right.
Yeah.
So. I think, but I love that though. And I mean, I love words and conversation and communication. And I think the more colorful people talk, the more interesting they are. And some of my friends that have a really amazing vocabulary, they're highly educated and they throw these crazy big words, kind of like Dickens does in his writing, or even like Maya Angelou is really good at that. And it's just like, I just sit there and I'm like, wow, I have these calendars, like word of the day, and my big goals of like throwing all these crazy, big, awesome words in my speech. And I don't, because then I just make up words because I can't think of, doohickey or whatever. So I'm always in awe of people. And my husband is so good at like mixing up metaphors as to be funny. Oh, and he does that all the time. It's so awesome. And most people just look at him like, what? And
what
I'm like rolling on the floor laughing. But
I have some not safe for work funny stories. There was years ago with an environmental company that I work for. There was a gentleman in our Los Angeles office who was from India, and so it was English was his second language. And when you're learning a new language, part of really becoming fluent is getting down to that level, the idioms, right?
Yeah, or to be able to tell a joke in another language.
Yeah,
like that that's I feel like, oh, you've mastered it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So the head of sales, the co-founder of the company and head of the sales, he used idioms all the time with great effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this other gentleman wanted to emulate him, and he would try to replicate the phrases without so much success,
right.
And they were hilarious.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So
I dated a guy from South America. He's a little bit older than me. This was like when I was in my 20s, and he spoke incredible English, but it's those idioms. And like we were taken down a tree, I think, at my dad's property, and he was like, lumber! And I'm like, I think Number? It's timber. Oh. Lumber. Timber, right? And yeah. then, and because he was a few years older than me, he goes, so I am like stealing the crib, right?
And I'm like, stealing the crib, right? Yes.
The cradle.
Yeah, right.
So stealing it just cracked me up. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So
One of my favorites was the Indian guy. He would say, oh, you're making a molehill out of nothing.
A molehill out of nothing. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I love it. I love it so much. Yeah, I studied German for like 8 years, and now I'm relearning it again. And we have friends in Germany, and we see them a lot. And when I, in high school, I learned from a very elderly German woman. And then, so this was back in the 90s, right? And so she always said, jawohl, jawohl, like you hear in the movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm talking to my friend and I'm like, jawohl, you know, he goes, Amy, what is this jawohl? You sound like an 80-year-old woman. Nobody in Germany says jawohl anymore. And I'm like, well, I did learn from an 80-year-old woman. So, yeah, right. You know,
didn't
he goes,
know.
No. He goes, stop saying that. I'm like, okay.
It's like 23 Skidoo.
Right.
Groovy.
Right.
Yeah. So talk to us about translation.
Yeah. So, okay. So the biggest things when you need to translate what you're saying for another culture, because you are, you know, selling your stuff in other countries, which is awesome. Great opportunity, is to always, always, always have your copy translated by native speakers of that country. Yeah. Don't use like Google Translate or Babbel or any of that stuff and think that it's going to be okay, because you just really, you need to not only get the words right, but understand the cultural differences. Like I was saying, like that jawohl or things like that. And there's so much different slang. And I think, you know, like here in the United States, we have Southern slang, Northern slang, California slang, that kind of thing. And you might not understand also those subtle differences when you go to another country, what all their differences are.
Right.
And so that's really and really important. So you use a native speaker to help you with that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, understand that there's words, specific words that are going to have completely unrelated meanings, because we're talking about getting down to the nuance of the language, the super subtle stuff within a language, right?
Right.
You got to understand that stuff, and the native speakers are the only way to go about it. Right.
Right. Yeah. Like I think a good example is like if you were a French baker and you wanted to start selling your goods in the United States, you might want to know that as Americans we have a special meaning when we talk about awesome buns, you know, our buns. So like
hold up, buns has two meanings.
It does. And so like if you didn't know that buns has more than one meaning, you might be curious why people are like laughing at your ads, right? Like just that kind of stuff. But
true.
And let me just throw in three words. Embarrassing viral video. Okay.
Like, yeah who wants to have that?
So
yeah, that would be the obvious first biggie issue, is don't use Google Translate.
Right.
That's a really, really good tip. But let me point out that on the other end of the scale, that when you're thinking about all the different facets of your brand strategy, and you get down to the nitty-gritty, the nuance, the little subtle stuff, right? Even those smallest points of minutiae, you have to do these considerations, right? So let me pick a small one. Like if we were to talk about color palette, for example, if I were to talk to you about your brand, and let's say we're going to make a decision between using blue or green, it might not feel like a big difference, you know, and people who are listening to us right now saying, yeah, blue, green, yes, that's a kind of a personal choice.
Right.
But did you know that on Iran, the color green is associated with government opposition?
No.
Opposition movements are associated with the color green. And in Ireland, it's, you know, kind of their national, part of their national symbolism. You know, so in completely two different cultures, two different countries, you making the choice of using the color green, as subtle and as small of a point as that might be in your overall brand strategy, it could be a big honking hairy deal when you start taking it over to other countries. You know, similarly, the psychology of color, bright red is usually associated with anger and passion. But in a lot of Eastern cultures, it symbolizes wealth and prosperity. You know, like in Japanese will give you a red envelope with money in it for a wedding, right?
Right. Color is such a big deal in Eastern countries.
It is.
Like way more than here. Like the symbolism. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, of course, all cultures are going to be different. And on just the issue of color, there are just so many of these little tidbit ideas. You know, this is why we're kind of covering the ideas and not giving you a laundry list of things to do and not do, you know, because it would be impossible to list all of those. There are just so many of them. So the point is, you know, even check the minutiae is the point.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what else do you got?
Well, I think another big one is gender issues. So in the U.S., the trend, thank goodness, is toward the empowerment of strong female role models. And in other cultures, women are expected to be more demure and reserved. And then even some other cultures, they're just suppressed and treated like second-class citizens. So to have like this overtly female campaign in one of those countries would not fly.
Right.
And if you don't fully understand the nuances of these issues, you might, you know, overlook the impact of simply repurposing your content and visual assets for your culture. So, like, if you had a really overtly strong female market campaign here, you might want to, you know, you need to switch it up if it's somewhere else. I mean,
you got to be aware of it first.
Being me, I would just choose not to do business with a country that wasn't going to accept me as a strong outlaw female.
Right.
Be like, I'm sorry, I'm too much for you. Yeah. But, you know, whatever, you know.
Deal with it.
Yeah. So for an example, let's say you've established this strong explorer brand and you have a focus on the uniqueness and individualism of your target audience and that kind of thing. And if you don't understand what we're saying with explorer brand, go back and listen to our explorer podcast. But we're not saying you forego expanding into the markets that you don't support, although I kind of did. But we're definitely not saying that you should set aside your value. So we're saying that you need to take your products and services to these new markets with your eyes wide open. And there may be significant shifts you'll need to make, you know, to optimize your brand and marketing success in there and not, you know, get yourself banned right from the get-go because you just were unaware, right?
Yeah, and it's one of the biggest points that I will make in the initial consultation about brand strategy using archetypes is to point out a lot of people will say, oh, well, if I limit myself to humor or if I limit myself to, you know, uniqueness or I limit myself to passion, you know, the core ideas underlying an archetype, if I limit myself to those ideas, I'm going to limit my marketing. And that is absolutely not the case. And so what you're saying here is be aware of what your core ideas and values. Don't throw your values away.
Right.
You just, when you encounter something like a culture that doesn't really strongly support females, like in the United States, that you're going to need to make a shift.
Right.
And that's not to say that by making a shift, you are setting aside your values. There's definitely ways that you can still do the same thing within the context of the archetype.
Absolutely.
Still strong, still powerful, still effective,
but
not offensive to those other people.
Something that you wouldn't consider offensive. But
okay, so let's consider more psychology here. So if I were to point out that there are specific behaviors, you know, for example, let's pick a truly American one right now. Aggressiveness. And I know. Americans, especially in the last few years, have become very aggressive.
Right.
And to be clear, there are lots of behaviors that we need to consider, not just aggressiveness. So if you consider any kind of behavior, also consider the effect of a different culture on that behavior.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, our history, our 250-ish year history, it's steeped in the ideas of personal freedoms, right? We are all about personal freedoms, especially recently. It's this kind of strong go-getter, aggressive approach to personal freedoms. Mm-hmm. It's infused in just about everything.
Yep.
In Japan, that kind of behavior, it would be seen as rude and disrespectful and obnoxious, right? You know, yeah. Go America.
America.
Go America. So if your neighbor archetype is probably not a big deal. But what if you were an outlaw or a ruler? You know, these archetypes do have this kind of in-your-face aggressiveness kind of built in. If you are that way, being that in-your-face aggressive approach, it might be marketing death in another country. If this happened in Japan, their culture's focus on dignity and respect, it would stop in those individuals from speaking up and pointing it out to you. Right. They're not going to be so disrespectful as to point it out.
Right. That's true. That's another thing too. Or even like the jester or brands that use some swear words and things like that. Like Japanese culture, you don't swear. They don't swear.
Right.
They really don't. Or if you do, it's considered you're kind of crass. Unintelligent because you didn't have a better word to use. It's very different than Americans with swearing. And I full disclosure.
Yeah, F that, man.
Yeah, full disclosure. we had a Japanese exchange student a couple of years ago, and you know, our daughter spent time in Japan. And so she's like this teenager, and I'm trying to be the cool mom, and I'm like, so, you know, teach me some Japanese swear words. And she's like, no. And I was like, what? And it was just me completely being first a jerk, and then second, just like not at all understanding that culture enough. Like, I was
You were asking her to, like, you know.
Yeah.
Strip naked and run around the house. Right. Like,
and
I'm
then
not
my daughter was
that.
Like, Mom. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, right. So that's it's a hard no, hard pass.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a hard pass.
You didn't learn any?
No. And But then the following year, Anna went to Japan and came back and she brought me some words. So I was
fine. Okay. Yeah, okay. So you still got it wrong. Yeah. Well, let me just finish up by thinking about, you know, things like, let's say you were the jester and you were, you know, wanted to use those slightly off-color terms. Just being wacky and wisecracking in a culture that's really serious, that's not going to fly, right? If you're a neighbor, being overly casual and laid back, if you're like a consider this, you know, proper stuffy culture, you know, like, you know, upper crust New England or of England, right? Or let's say you're the lover archetype and you're even hinting at sex. If you're in an ultra-conservative country, you know, a lot of countries in the Middle East, they're not going to be too hip on it. You kind of get the idea. Every archetype, their approach, there might be aspects of it that you're going to have to consider, right?
Similar to that one, I'll throw out the idea of individualism. So in the U.S., we're taught that being strong and independent is a good thing, back to your whole aggressive kind of America thing.
Yep. Right.
And it's seen as the thing that we should all strive for ourselves as well as our children. But other cultures take a different approach. For example, in India, there's a perspective that community involvement is more important than individual achievement. Hmm. And that's more of like a group kind of mentality. Right. And in Asian cultures, there's a focus on strength of the family unit, again, at the expense of individualism. So this isn't good or bad or better or worse. It's just different. You know, you just like have to understand it. And then this can affect all aspects of your marketing. So your images would be stronger with family shots as opposed to individuals, things like that, if that was the kind of culture you were marketing in. And especially the words, you know, of course, I'm going to say that, but the words that you select should reflect ideas of community, unity, collaboration, teams, things like that. So, but again, I just want to say again, we're not asking you to change your archetype or change your brand, just fit it into the culture that you're going into.
Okay. So there is one thing that in the United States, we're still number one at. Do you know what it is? And it's not science and math and other forms of education. There's one thing that
sports?
We are.
Sports? I don't know.
No. It is thinking that we're number one.
Well, yeah. That's true.
It doesn't matter if we are or aren't. We are the best
at
thinking
that we're the
best.
Yeah, that's true. That's funny.
Go America.
Right.
Okay, so here's a pro tip. If there have been changes to to a country's borders, as a brand, you have to be aware of those changes, or you're going to tick people off. You know, here's a great example. This is 2 or 3 years ago. The American retailer The Gap, they actually had to issue a public apology to China. They printed T-shirts that showed the wrong outline of China, essentially. It didn't include South Tibet or Taiwan or the South China Sea. I mean, areas that are clearly China, right?
I thought you were going to say...
Considering what?
Oh, I thought you were going to say that it actually showed the United States.
Oh! Yeah, that would be truly American, right? Yes, yes, yeah. Go China. So, you know, you have to think about the changes that have happened in the past one generation in and around the Soviet Union, just to kind of, you know, really get a real handle on this. You know, there's a lot of things that have happened. You know, Czechoslovakia, when we were younger, is the Czech Republic and Slovakia, right? So there's lots of border changes. Got to keep aware of those things, right?
Right. I think that happens less now, and yeah, I haven't heard in a while, like, a country changed its name in a while. Sometimes they do that too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's good to be aware of those things for sure. Right. Yeah. So let's talk about storytelling. So every culture has their parables and their stories and, you know, their lessons and things that they tell their children growing up and that sort of thing. And a couple episodes ago, we talked about an American marketing campaign that showed a stork carrying a baby. That's normal for us. Like a diaper. I think it was diapers, Pampers or something had, like, you know, a stork and a baby or whatever. And right. We understand that. We get that. Yeah, that stork delivers babies. Okay.
And, you mean that's only in America?
Well, no, maybe not only in America, but it's certainly not in Japan. They don't have that same story. So when they saw this ad, I feel like it was a diaper. It was a diaper commercial. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When they saw the ad, I don't know what they must have thought. Well, what are these crazy Americans thinking? Like, they let big birds steal their babies? Like, what's up with that? Like,
what?
You know, like, yeah, it's just not a thing. So. Yeah, you know.
But they were, I'm sure they weren't actually saying anything. They were thinking those words and, you know, scrunching their eyes and cocking their head and just thinking
very
it politely.
Politely being like, what? WTF? Very politely. Quietly.
Now, if you're Japanese, we are not mocking you. We're just being American. And we're just pointing out the differences that need to be pointed out.
So. Oh, for sure. Americans could totally take some lessons about being nicer from the Japanese. For sure.
Absolutely.
Like, yes,
right.
Yes.
Okay, here's a shocker. And I, you know, not going into politics, but the FAA just announced that the last 10-year average of issues of inappropriate behavior, like being too drunk or you know, trying to open up an exit door during flight, or you know, having to be escorted off the plane by the air marshals, right? Mm-hmm. That type of stuff has averaged 100 to 150 events per year in the country. So far in 2021, they're at 1,500.
Okay.
And that's at this rate, that's going to be 6,000 this year. Wow.
In our country, that's a
40-fold increase? I mean, that's just crazy. Yeah. Crazy. We're just being really kind of obnoxious, more so than usual.
Really?
Yeah. So that's
really crazy considering that there's so fewer people flying these days because of the pandemic. So that's even a bigger number, really, if you think about it that way.
Well, the biggest thing is, you know, asking people to wear masks. You know, that's the issue.
Have you flown in the last year and a half?
Have not. No.
So I did a couple times. I did go see my mom, it was in a couple different kinds of airbase, big or airports, big ones, small ones, Charlotte. Or why they say Charlotte, North Carolina, airport and stuff. It's a big one. And I witnessed zero people being jerks about masks in every situation. And it was cool. It was kind of cool because you're in the plane and the flight attendants walk down and make sure everyone's got a mask. And then they're like, okay, we can fly. Like they won't, they wouldn't even leave the ground I didn't see anybody give a problem, but that was last year. People are getting a little sick of masks. It might be a little bit different now. I don't know, but, but I thought, and I was like, yeah, I'm kind of weird about flying. I kind of had to. It was the situation where I had to go see my mom. And I was like, but I can be rest assured that planes have probably never been cleaner than they are right now.
True that.
You know?
True that.
They gave us all hand sanitizer. I mean, they literally did everything they possibly could
Good.
Anyway.
Okay, so let's go to the next topic. I've got religion down. And
ooh,
obviously.
You sure? information.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're just, you know, just the idea, religions are, they are just replete with rules and restrictions and mores and standards and, you know, ways of, you know, ways to run, rule your, run your life, right? All of which you need to be aware of and then follow them as if you are a native, right? So here, here's a good example. For Orthodox Jews in Israel, there are actually 39 behaviors, and this set of behaviors actually has a name. I forget what it is. These 39 things you are not allowed to do on the Sabbath, which is sundown Friday through sundown Saturday.
Okay.
And that includes doing any type of work. And specifically, it also says you are not to apply, because that would be a form of work, deodorant.
Oh. Hmm.
Now, considering that in Israel, the average temperature of 95 degrees Fahrenheit and heavy black clothing and packing people into a small space, and the men rarely shave, so they're not really familiar with, you know, shaving products and, you know, that, that kind of stuff. This is going to be a sweaty, smelly affair. Well, Gillette saw this not just as a challenge, but as an opportunity. So they carefully crafted their message to this very niche market of Israelis who are Orthodox Jews in Israel. And they called it their I Don't Roll on Shabbos campaign, where they were talking about wearing deodorant. You know, you have to apply it before the Sabbath, before, you know, sometime during Friday. But by wearing their Gillette deodorant, you're not going to be that offensive while you're, you know, it was very, they turned it into a positive.
Oh.
They increased their brand awareness dramatically, but they also increased their sales in the area by a whopping 24%.
Oh, that's amazing. So just put it on early on the day on Friday and you'll be good.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, have it be, take, you know, and I, apparently, I guess prior to this campaign, the Israelis were choosing a less expensive, less effective deodorant. But by talking about it and saying, you know, this is really what you need, that's why the sales increased so much, is because they were talking about their brand. They were doing things within brand, but they were also doing it completely in the context of this religious difference.
Right. Yeah. And they were sensitive to it. So.
And they were sensitive to it.
Yeah. Awesome.
So there you go.
Yeah. So basically the bottom line here is that when you decide to expand into a new market, we strongly recommend that you do your due diligence, dig deep to learn about that culture, and bring on native people of that culture, right?
Yeah.
To consider how you might need to pivot your brand or be sensitive to their culture, all the things we talked about.
Right.
And don't forget your brand consistency is still really, really important. And we're not asking you to deviate from your brand message. Just work with it within the culture that you're expanding to. You don't need to reinvent everything from scratch, of course. And if you did that, you'd end up essentially having two independent brands to manage, and that's just a headache.
And who wants that?
Right. So, you know, and one of the huge advantages of using archetypes is that you can avoid that and simplify your brand strategy by that, and it makes everything a lot easier. And, you know, we say that every time. So preach into the choir.
That that's really kind of the point is using archetypes takes things down to a fundamental level that actually is below all of these cultural differences. That, you know, if you are using humor as the core of your archetype, you know, the jester archetype, humor is seen throughout all cultures. You know, you just have to find out what flavor of humor and what things to avoid within that sense of humor, you know. So here's how we suggest that you approach this. Okay, so step one, obviously, figure out your archetype. Go to brandarchetypes.com. If you haven't taken the questionnaire, just use the navigation in the top of the top of any page. It's free. Step two, be clear on the exact emotional connection that you are going to establish, your brand's missions, your goals, and why you are in business. Again, if you have not heard or know of Simon Sinek and his book, Begin With Why, you really need to do that because it's good stuff, right?
Yeah.
So step three, once you have all of that stuff under your belt and firmly established, you should not ever feel a need to change them. this stuff is fundamental. They will act as the solid rock foundation of everything you do in your brand. These things should be so fundamental, they really should have no problem crossing any cultural borders, right? What you do with them after you cross that border is then going to be affected by the stuff that we're talking about today. So new cultural differences that you might encounter, they may subtly change your specific messaging, you know, your brand assets, like we're talking about color, you know, the approach that you take to specific marketing campaigns, but that high level brand strategy, the kind of the foundation, that should remain the same, right? Because archetypes, go archetypes.
Well, absolutely. And the 12 main archetypes are the 12 main archetypes because they exist in every culture on earth. That's why they're an archetype.
Kind of
so
the point.
So if you are contemplating adopting a brand archetype strategy, and you also know that your vision for your company is to, you know, move into international markets, this is almost this is a no-brainer. If you pick one of these, you really can't lose, because every culture you go into is going to be able to identify with the archetype you pick, mm-hmm. and it's going to simplify everything. So yeah, exactly. Archetypes.
But it's not to say that choosing archetypes as the foundation of your strategy stops you from having to do all that research, you know?
Right.
Because if you don't do the research, then you're going to do the Parker Pen tagline gaffe, and that, who wants
right.
that?
Right. Yes.
And then you get the viral video and, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, Amy, why don't you give us a wrap up?
Yeah, so if you think we missed any important ideas about shifting into new cultural spaces, so please reach out to us. We'd love to talk about your take on it, ideas you have. We'd love to hear any mistakes or issues that you had, especially if they're funny.
Or fun stories. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, if you really don't want to admit to anybody you did it, we won't have to use your name. But, you know, Kevin and I are pretty thick-skinned about that stuff. We don't care about ourselves, but we won't out you if you don't want
us
to.
It's because we do stupid things so often.
Well, yeah.
We have to be,
yeah. Sure. And so if you have any questions, you know, call us. Reach out to us at brandarchetypes.com. And of course, we have the word lists for sale for each archetype for $29.95. And follow us on all the social platforms. And if you are listening to us from our website and you would like to receive all of our episodes as they come out in your inbox, you can go to wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. That would be great.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.